cars in the driveway. The garage is full of junk. It'll take me a week to clean it, but by then I'll still be drunk. I got the blues. Oh, the homeowner blues.
Well, man's home is his castle. This one's just a hassle.
Homeowner blues.
Hello, friends, and welcome to this, the Homeowner's Friend Podcast, the podcast that will help you achieve the American dream and live the best life you can, even on a rice and beans budget. I'm Steve, your host, and on today's show, we're going to do a quick talk on how condos and co-ops work. Just kind of explain the ins and outs of those things, kind of some of the advantages and disadvantages and things like that. In case you're interested in getting into one of those housing situations, you know, some people can't afford a home, a standalone home, or perhaps they can't maintain one. Or perhaps, you know, you have a friend or a son or a daughter or somebody else that wants to buy one. So at least you can get a brief outline on how they work from the Homeowner's Friend Podcast, which should be helpful for you. This is show 89, and because of that, I want to hit a couple of quick topics here. You know, we've had 89 shows so far, and I think folks have enjoyed the show. I've gotten quite a few emails stating that. I know we've imparted an awful lot of information here on the show, and I hope I've been able to help you do some stuff and get you thinking about some different things, and I'm sure we probably saved you some money along the way, hopefully. Didn't make you spend too much more. So, you know, I'm happy that the show's been as successful as it has been, which brings us to my next two topics. The first one is that the 100th show is coming up here in a few more shows, and when we hit that 100th show, I'm going to be doing another giveaway. I'm not quite sure what it's going to be yet, but it'll be probably the biggest thing we've given away so far. So if you want to get in on that contest, send me an email, steve@hofpodcast.com, and let me know that you're looking to get in on the contest. And we'll put you in the hat, and at the 100th show, we'll draw somebody's name and give them some kind of a pretty decent prize. Again, I haven't quite figured it out yet, but I will. Trust me. So the second thing is I've been threatening for a while about getting the Foundation Club support network up and running here on the podcast, and I'm finally going to do that. It's been long enough. I've been talking about it, and you know, get busy with life here, and I haven't got it together yet, but I'm going to do it now. So basically, what the Foundation Club is going to be, it's just a way for you to help support the show. It's not all fiscal. You don't have to pay money necessarily, although that's one way to do it. But basically, you know, I need some help doing the show. You know, of course, fiscally is one thing. I mean, to help pay for the software I've had to purchase and I'm going to need to purchase, and you know, hosting and all that kind of stuff. It costs some money, and I'd certainly appreciate a little bit of financial help to help pay for that kind of stuff. And if I could make a few bucks on the side, that would be wonderful also, naturally. It's America, right? But also, another way to get involved in this is to help the show somehow. So if you would like to, say, be on the show, if you have a skill that you're pretty good at, and it doesn't necessarily have to be directly related to home ownership, although, you know, one would hope it would be pretty close to it, but, you know, you may be a lawyer, you may be a real estate agent, you may be into gardening, you may be into farming, who knows? Heck, you could even be a mechanic or something like that. Something that would help the homeowner. And, you know, we can stretch things a little bit. We got some pretty good flexible rubber bands here. And, you know, you could be on the show or put some content on the website or do something. And that could get you a membership in the Foundation Club. Also, I need somebody to do a little bit of web work. If you're into that, into, you know, HTML programming or whatever, if you can do that, just help I want to do some modifications to the website. If you can do that, that would be a way to get on the podcast, on the Foundation Club. So as you can see, if you could just help with the show, help make it better, that's a way to get on the show. Or you can donate money. On the money side of things, I was thinking of setting it at a yearly rate of $49, which is like the cost of a couple sheets of plywood. I can't imagine we haven't saved you at least that amount of money over the year here, or 8 months or so that we've been on the air. However, I think if you go ahead and do it before the end of this weekend, I'm going to lower it down to 39, just kind of as a kickoff, because you're going to be, you know, you're going to be one of the first. So if you can do it, if you can send in 39, that would be a good start. And then after that, it'll be 49. And what it, how you basically do that, if you want to do the financial bit, join up that way, is just send via PayPal. Pretty much everybody's got PayPal these days. Just get on PayPal and send the money to steve@hofpodcast.com. The email's right there in the system, and you can go ahead and do that. And I'll try and put a link on the website somehow, too. Again, I'm not a web expert, so I don't know how I'm going to do that, but I'll try and figure out some way to do that. But, you know, you could just log onto your account, go to send money, type in steve@hofpodcast.com in the two button and box, and, you know, type in the amount, 39 till the end of the weekend or 49 thereafter, and it'll get you in for a year. And go ahead and do that. And what it does, of course, it gives me your email address and all that. And then when I get the software set up, which is going to be in the next week or so, I'll go ahead and send you a logon so you can get onto the members-only side of the website. And what I'm going to do is put some extra material out there over time. So there'll be some extra podcasts on interesting topics put out there. There'll probably be some video content. And just other resources that I feel will help the Foundation Club. And then, of course, the podcast itself is going to remain free, the normal podcast. But like I said, there'll just be some extra things stuck out there for you. But that's not the, you know, the main reason to join is just to support the podcast, to help keep it going and keep it getting better. And I'm telling you, there's going to be a lot of neat stuff happening this summer. There's a lot of neat things that are going to happen. We're going to be getting involved in some projects. There's going to be a lot more videos on the YouTube channel and things like that. So it's going to be interesting come this summer. The weather's kind of crummy here in Connecticut right now, so not a whole lot's happening building wise. But trust me, there's going to be a lot more content come this summer. So it'd be good to help support the show and to make that much better. So enough of all that stuff. Again, if you want to do the financial bet, $39 through the weekend to steve@hofpodcast.com. So getting right into condos and co-ops. Now, first of all, of course, if you buy a house, you are getting a title or a deed that is for the land and everything that's on the land, in most cases. And so you own the land, you own the house, you own everything on the land. You own the shell, you own the fences, the pool, the you know, the trees, the, you know, whatever's on that land, stone walls, you own it. You own the whole kit and caboodle. You're responsible for the whole kit and caboodle, and you own the whole kit and caboodle. So that's how normal houses, or even if you just buy raw land, same deal. That's how they work. Condos are a little bit different. When you buy a condo, what you're doing is buying an interest in basically a housing development, and what you're buying is the right to live in one of the units. There's really no difference, you know, structurally between a condo and an apartment building. You know, they're really similar. I mean, you know, style differences and construction differences, yes, but I mean, as far as the way they operate or the way they work, they're very similar, except in a rental situation, you're going to pay, you know, $500,000, $3,000 a month, whatever it is, for the opportunity to live inside that apartment. Now, of course, with an apartment, you have a little bit less freedom. They usually don't let you paint the walls and that kind of thing, but you do have the right to live in the apartment and to use whatever common facilities there are in that particular development. In a condo, you're going to be dumping over a pile of cash, or your bank is, and then you're going to repay the bank to purchase the rights to live in a condo. And it's, again, it's very similar to a rental arrangement, except you're paying all the money up front. And of course, with a condo, if you buy a condo for $100,000, the value of that condo is going to fluctuate with the market that the condo's in. So if you buy in an upcoming place and property values go up for all the houses, they will likely go up for the condos as well, and you may end up being able to sell your condo for $110,000, $120,000, or $150,000 several years down the road and actually make a profit on it, just like a normal real estate deal. Now, when you buy a condo, what are you buying exactly? Well, you're basically buying a piece of paper that says that you have the right to live in this particular unit. And the unit itself is defined in the contract as being, typically, it's like the whole inside of the unit from the sheetrock in. So what that means is you basically own the sheetrock, but you don't own the actual wall structure. So what that means in simple things is that you can hang things on the wall. You can paint the walls. You could probably even build a wall inside if you wanted to. And you can do anything with that sheetrock or into the center of the building. You own that right. You can paint it hot pink if you want. It's your sheetrock, and everything inside the sheetrock outer shell is yours as well. And conversely, you're also required, and frankly, you'd want to maintain all that space as well. The carpeting is yours. If it wears out, you replace it. The toilet is yours. If it breaks, you fix it. The heating system is yours. If it breaks, you fix it. Air conditioning system. You know, anything like that. Probably even some of the, you know, it depends on the contract and how things are laid out. But, you know, you probably own some of the plumbing, some of the electrical, things like that. If you need to put a new outlet in, I believe you can do that in a condo. It's you're allowed to do that. So if you want to put in a new light switch or something, you can have an electrician come in and do that. You know, these agreements, this exactly what you own and what you don't own is spelled out in your your contract when you buy the condo, and in your deed tells you exactly what you do and do not own. In addition, you're buying the rights to use all of the common ownership stuff, which is everything from the sheetrock out to the property line of the property. So if there's obviously there's going to be some stairs coming up to your unit, sidewalks, parking lots, fences, trees, shrubs, all of that, you're buying the right to traverse through that, to use that. You know, if it's a pool, to use the pool. Or tennis courts, to be able to use those items, to be able to park your car in the parking lot, to walk on the sidewalk. Of course, somebody visiting can do that as well, but you're basically buying the rights to use all that common stuff. It's called the items that are in common ownership. And again, it's basically everything outside of the sheetrock. So it's the actual structure of the building as well. It includes your windows, it includes your roof, your siding, again, your steps, stairs. Everything outside is all in common ownership. And how it works typically is there's a homeowners association that you belong to by being a owner in the condo. You, by default, belong to the homeowners association. And the homeowners association sets up all the rules and also collects money as fees, condo fees, from all the owners of the condo so that they have money in their account so that they can take care of all the items in this common area. So as the steps get worn out, they can get them fixed. As the siding, if the siding blows off and needs to be fixed, they can do that. Or if the windows go bad after so many years, they can replace them. The roof, repave the driveway, whatever the case may be, they'll collect money so that they can go ahead and maintain all of those elements for you. You don't actually do it. The Homeowners Association manages that. Sometimes they have a professional manager that works with them. Sometimes it's done by the agent. Depends on how it's set up, but somehow they end up having a checkbook and they pay for all the common items that need to be taken care of. They also pay for taxes on the property, insurance on the outside property, snow removal, mowing the lawn, fertilizing, all that kind of upkeep. They take care of all that, as well as taking care of pools, tennis courts, things like that. If you live in a condo or thinking of purchasing a condo that has a lot of amenities, some condos have, they have outdoor and indoor pools, they have weight rooms, community centers, all that kind of stuff. Just understand that all that stuff costs money to maintain, and the owners of the condos are going to actually end up paying to maintain that. So if you're in a really huge complex with, hundreds of units, it probably won't make much difference. Divided out by 100 units or whatever, it's not going to be a lot of money. But if it's a relatively small unit, number of units, understand that you could be on the hook for a fair amount of money each month to keep all this stuff up and going. Even in a normal condo, a lot of times, the fees can be into the hundreds of dollars a month. So you got to watch that. The condo association also has the ability to assess more money on your condo if they feel it is necessary. And again, this is all laid out in the legal contract. I'm not going to get into that. But if, for example, the condo is 10 years old and all of a sudden the condo needs a new roof because the roof that was put on there was faulty or, you know, whatever reason, and the insurance company's not going to pay it and they can't get the manufacturer to repair it, they can assess an additional fee onto each unit to pay for the repair or replacement of the roof on the building. Now, hopefully, if it's a well-managed, you know, condo association, they're going to be putting money aside for this kind of stuff as time goes on. So if it's a 30-year roof, hopefully by the time the 30 years comes around, they have enough money in an account somewhere to pay for the roof repair. However, if the condo associations run like the United States government, they probably won't have an extra dime. So they'll have to assess you the money when it comes time to go ahead and do those repairs. So it's neat when you buy a condo when it's new, because you usually don't have a lot of that kind of stuff popping up. But as time goes on and the condos need more and more maintenance, this can become a rather expensive endeavor when they start tacking these assessments on to do these repairs as they're needed. Now, I will say that the condo associations are a democratic body, typically speaking, and you are actually a member. So you actually can vote. The condo association will vote to spend money or to assess fees to fix the roof or to pay the guy to mow the lawn or whatever the case may be. So if you don't like what they're doing or you don't feel what they're doing right, you can get a bunch of your co-owners together and you can go there and vote the stuff down. So it is a democracy, so to speak. But you know, just understand that you know they do run the show. They also have, you know, rules, condo rules, things that you can and cannot do. And they are also the group that will enforce those rules. And those rules are common sense rules, like you can't, you know, bang nails into the outside of the building to, you know, hang a bird feeder or something. I mean, you don't want people banging nails into the building because that, you know, everybody has to end up paying to fix that. Or, you know, banging nails into the roof or drilling holes through the wall, stuff like that. They don't want that happening, so they're going to have rules like that. But they also may have rules that, you know, you can't park a commercial vehicle on the property. Or you can't hang a flag outside or put up a flag pole or, you know, any number of things. You can't have a dog, or you can't have a dog over 20 pounds, or you can't have a dog over 50 pounds, or you can't have more than one dog, or you can only have a cat, or whatever the case may be. They can have all these different kinds of rules, and they're the ones that enforce that. So it's, you know, you're certainly living in a community. You don't have the independence you have in your own home. Not that you have a ton of independence in your home either. You've got the town to deal with and everything else, but you have even less in a condo. So just understand that's the way it is. You're kind of held captive to the homeowners association and their whims, basically. But it's not a bad thing. I mean, because they do take care and maintain the outside of the building. And certainly, to have the facilities that, you know, your typical condo has, if you were to pay somebody, like let's say if you're going to pay somebody to plow your driveway, if you have a house, you know, let's say we're in Connecticut, okay? I know people that are paying $20 every time the guy comes to plow their driveway. So, you know, if the guy has to come, you know, twice a week or once a week for the 3 or 4 months of winter, or even if he has to come every other week, that can add up to a few $100 just to plow the driveway. And then you got to mow the lawn. You've got to, you know, fertilize the lawn and all this other stuff. And if you don't do that, if you have a house yourself, you're going to end up paying that whole bill yourself, which can be pretty expensive on top of all the normal maintenance that you have to do to the house. So if you're in a condo, you kind of share those costs. There's one guy who comes in and plows the parking lot for everybody, and everybody divides that bill up and pays it out. And in theory, it should be cheaper. I don't know really if it is, but it should, in theory, you'd think it would be cheaper to do it that way, just economy of scale. So, you know, if you're going to be, you know, if you're able and willing and you know, just want to do a lot of this work yourself, you know, condo is probably not the way you'd want to go, because you're going to end up paying to have this stuff done anyway. It's the way you know, you don't do your own driveway. So if you want to do that kind of thing and you don't want to spend money on that, then you know, you get a house. But condos are cheaper usually, so you know there's a lot of give and takes on this whole situation. Now again, back to the kind of how they're laid out and stuff. Again, condos can be and usually are kind of like apartments in that you own a part of the building. Usually it's a bigger building. There might be four or six or you know more units in a particular building, and you own one of those units. It is possible to have condos be a collection of individual homes as well, in which case you actually own the home but not the land it sits on, if you follow what I'm saying. There can be different arrangements. It could be that you own the inside of the home but not the outside of the home and not the land. Those are typically they're typically called detached condominiums in that situation, and they do have them, and that's kind of a neat way to be too, because you actually own the house. If you want to, you know, modify the inside of the house, you know, you can do that. You're in your own house. You've got your own yard, so to speak, or it seems as though you have your own yard, but in fact you don't. It's everybody's yard, but there will be a yard around your house. So if your kids want to have a swing set out back, you know, they can do that, and you have this space which is kind of yours. I mean, it's not yours, but it's yours to use, and the neighbors all know that everybody has their own little space. And although everybody owns everybody else's space, you kind of get so you know that, no, that's his space. We'll let him do things on his space. If the kids want to play Frisbee or whatever, they can't. Whereas in a normal condo, there's usually not as much common space, and what there is shared by everybody. There's really no privacy at all, because you have no even feeling that you have a yard. You know, whereas these kinds of condos, it kind of feels like you have a yard, even though technically you don't. Again, a condominium is... it's just a legal framework. Condos only exist because of our legal laws. They're creatures of the court, so to speak, and of our legal system. When you buy a condo, you're not really buying anything but the use of the inside of this building. So it's not like you own the building, because you don't. You own what's inside the sheetrock. So it's kind of it's just a legal thing. You're not really buying the building or even a part of it. You're just buying the use of it. So it's just a legal thing. It's fine. I mean, if you buy them, that you know what you're getting into. But if you buy a house, you're actually buying the house. If you wanted to tear the house down and build a new one, you can. If you wanted to dig a big hole in the backyard and sell the gravel to a gravel bank company to put a new road in, you can do that. You know, you can't do any of that kind of stuff in a condo. You don't own the land or the building. So that's the difference. It's you know, you're buying this use, this right to use the property. So it's a little bit different than buying a house. It's kind of more, I don't know, nebulous or something. To me, it almost seems like it's not real, but it is. I mean, you are actually buying that use, but it's just not, it's not like you're buying a thing. You know what I'm saying? There is also, I read this thing on Wikipedia on condominiums just to get a couple of these terminology things down that I wasn't sure of. There's the deed for your property. They indicate there's a deed for your property, which describes what you own, your unit, where it is situated in the building and where it is on the property and stuff like that. And there's also a master deed, which describes all the common areas. So that's legally where you go to look to see where your space is and where their space is and who's required to maintain what. With a condo, you do in fact own the rights to the inside of that building. So in most cases, if you want to rent out your condo, you can rent it out. You can actually buy condos and turn them into rental units and rent them just like you can rent a house that you own. There's no difference in most cases. I mean, there may be some condo associations that don't allow that, but a majority of them, I believe, do. I know I had a friend that did that, actually rented somebody else's condo for a while, and then they ended up buying it from them. So that does happen, and it's usually legal, but again, not always. And conversely, you can go ahead and sell the condo or sell those rights to somebody else, again, perhaps at a profit or perhaps at a loss. Just for ha-has, there's also like non-residential condominiums. You can get industrial condos or commercial condos where you buy, you know, the town that I worked in a while ago, they had commercial condos where you could buy a unit in a commercial building and you could have your business in that building and you own the building. And again, if the price, the value of the building went up, you would end up being able to sell it for more and you would run your business from it. So it's the same kind of arrangement. You know, they would own what's inside the walls, and the association would own what was outside. So they have different different forms of these. So practicality wise, what's it like to live in a condo? Well, what's it like to live in an apartment building? They're almost the same. You know, a lot of times they're built better or whatever, and sometimes they're not, depending on the unit. But you know, it's basically like living in an apartment. You can have somebody living under you and somebody over you and beside you. So same kind of thing where if your kid's making a lot of noise, you're banging on the walls or whatever, your neighbors are going to hear that and are going to be upset. So it's that, you know, it's that same kind of an arrangement. In some cases, some condos are very nice. It depends, again, where you are, just like anything else. You can buy a house and have lousy neighbors too. So, you know, keep that in mind. You own everything inside, so you still have to maintain. You know, if the toilet clogs, doesn't work right, the sinks start leaking, whatever, you have to go ahead and fix that. The added interesting aspect of that is, especially if you're in a multi-floor unit, is somebody above you could have a problem, and it could become your problem really quick. And that happened with a friend of mine who had a condo. they had a problem with their heating system. It crapped out or something happened with it and it sprang a leak. In their unit, they had a second floor. They had like a second floor unit with a loft, and there was another unit, a first floor unit underneath. And their heating system sprung a leak and water went down into the lower unit and did some pretty serious damage to that unit, to the flooring, ceiling, some of the furnishings and things like that. So I don't exactly know how all that worked out, but I know my friend had some responsibility for that because it was his stuff that leaked, and I think everybody had insurance for that or whatever, but it was a mess. He had to get his fixed, and then the stuff downstairs had to get fixed, and I don't think he had to pay to fix the stuff downstairs, but I don't remember how all that worked with the insurance. But just understand that if something happens next door, it can also affect you, because again, you're all in one common building. Again, the maintenance of the building, if you're in a condo association that doesn't like maintaining the building, it's kind of a, pardon the pun, but kind of a low-rent condo arrangement, they might not take care of the building very well. It could start to look kind of crappy. They don't enforce the rules. It could start to look kind of crappy. If that happens, you could actually lose value in your condo if it becomes less desirable for somebody to live in it in the future. So you got to kind of watch out for that. And I'll throw this last little caveat out as well. That, you know, for a period, a lot of times condos were kind of the low end of the housing scale. So a lot of times condos were built pretty cheap. Not all of them, certainly, but a lot of them had that reputation. So if you do get into something, you know what you're getting into. Because if you get into a building that was made kind of cheaply and has, you know, cheap windows and cheap doors and stuff like that, understand that it's you that's going to be paying to replace that stuff when it goes bad in a few years. I know I've been in some condos that had some really, really cheap windows and cheap doors and things like that. Just junk. I mean, just, you know, they're built as cheap as they can be. So watch that. And I'm not saying that they're all like that. There are some condos that are very, very, very high end that you and I could never afford to get into. So, you know, it runs the gamut from very cheap to very, very expensive. So just understand what you're getting into. In that, if the thing is really crappy, that you might end up having to pay to fix it. So just bear in mind that scenario. Co-ops. Co-ops are the second thing I wanted to talk about a little bit here. Co-ops are kind of interesting. They're very similar to condos, except that you're not actually buying, you're kind of buying the right to live in the unit, kind of like a condo, but the difference is you're actually buying a share in the entire building. So there isn't like there's a co-op association or whatever that manages the building itself, but when you buy a co-op share or shares, you are actually purchasing basically a share in a corporation that owns the building. So you're actually a partial owner of the building, along with all the other people that own the building. And by default, by being a member, I guess you get the right to live in your unit or whatever. I don't exactly know how they're laid out, but it's kind of similar to a condo or an apartment, but they're a little different, and it's mainly just a legal difference. I don't think, you know, practicality, I don't think it makes a whole lot of difference, but it's just a different way they're legally set up. It's kind of interesting the way it's done. There's some huge co-ops. If you ever drive, I don't know if you ever drive into New York City at all, if any of you from New England, or if you're up visiting, if you're on 95, on the Connecticut side of New York, in the, I think it's in the Bronx, I believe, or part of Queens, I forget. But on the way into 95 into New York City from Connecticut anyway, on the Connecticut side, you go through what's known as Co-op City. It's a bunch of very high-rise, I don't know, they're like 20 or 30 story high buildings there. There's a whole series of, I don't know, a dozen or more of them. And there's like, I don't know how many thousands of people live in these buildings. They're huge. I mean, they've got their own school and everything else. It's called Co-op City. And they're all co-ops. They're all cooperatives. Cooperatives are very popular in the cities. There's a lot of co-op apartments and stuff like that. And it's interesting that I've heard, and I don't know all the details. I remember hearing this on like Seinfeld, that if you want to get into a co-op, if you want to buy into it, they actually check you out to make sure that you're suitable to buy into the co-op, that you're not going to be a troublemaker, that you have good credit and all that kind of stuff. Because they don't want you know, riffraff coming into the apartments, like the units, I guess. I don't know. It's an interesting scenario. But, you know, co-ops in New York City are very, very expensive. You could easily buy a house in Connecticut for what you pay to get into a co-op in New York City. They're very, of course, everything in New York City is through the roof. I mean, you could spend $1 million on a very, very small apartment or a very small co-op in New York City. I don't think Co-op City, I don't think they're that expensive, because that's kind of outside the city, and it's you know, it is what it is. But I'm sure they're still pretty expensive to even live there. So it's a whole different world, certainly. And someday maybe I'll talk a little bit about New York City, because it's a fascinating place. And it's worse. A lot of the zoning regulations started out, and with good reason, the way they used to cram people in there. But it's another whole topic. I'm not going to get into it. But it's a fascinating city if you haven't visited ever. It's an interesting trip. A very nice place to visit. I don't know that I would want to live there. I can't deal with that heavy traffic and so many people all the time. But some people love it. So it depends on what your cup of tea is. But that's basically how co-ops work. A lot of co-ops are big buildings, tall buildings, like huge apartment buildings and stuff like that. A lot of them are co-ops, but they can also be condos either way. So, you know, you really need to, if you're thinking about getting into one of these, you really got to weigh your options. A lot of times you don't have a choice because the financial matters. I mean, even in Connecticut, I know you can buy condos for, you know, under $100,000 these days, where it's pretty hard to find a house for that. You don't have to be a real dive in a kind of a crummy area to get into a house that's in that kind of price range. So, you know, they have their place. They do have their advantages. You don't have to do your maintenance and stuff like that. But it can be a disadvantage with the condo fees and stuff like that. It depends on what your needs are, how you want to live, and all of that. And certainly, before you get into any of these kind of situations, you know, if you go to an open house and they're trying to push condos on people, I would definitely, you know, before I sign my name to anything, I would get a hold of that master agreement or the master lease all the paperwork for the unit, so you know what you can do and what you can't do, what they're going to do, what they're not going to do. You're probably going to want to take a look at the history. If it's not a new unit, you probably want to take a look at the history of the condo fees. I think that's always available by law. You can always get that. Take a look at the history of the condo fees. See how many assessments they've had. See how things run. You know, look around the property very carefully. If things are starting to get ratty and you see a lot of problems with the building, rotting siding, stuff like that, understand that at some point that's going to get fixed, and at some point you're going to get billed to fix it. So just keep that in mind before you sign your life away. And like anything else, make sure you check all the paperwork. And know what you're getting into before you go ahead and do it. And I would certainly have a lawyer look at it, one that's familiar with condos or co-ops. Have the lawyer look at it and advise you as to whether or not it's a good idea, and what the good, you know, what would be the good and the bad in that particular situation. But certainly, millions of people live in them. They're a great stepping stone I think they're better than a rent if you're going to be there for a while, because you are in fact paying for some real property, although it's really just on paper, but it's real property, it's real rights that you're buying to that condo. And at some point, hopefully, if property values go up, you will end up actually making some money on it. And at the very least, even if the property values don't go up, you're hopefully going to be gaining some equity in the property. So when you go to sell it, you'll hopefully get the check for the property and actually end up, after your loan is paid off, hopefully there'll be some money coming back your way to pay back some of that, some of those mortgage payments, which of course is something you'll never get in a rental situation. That money's always gone. So even if the value, if the value doesn't go up, you'll get some money back. I want to get somebody on here to talk about mortgages too, but obviously the first 5 or 10 years of any mortgage, unless you're making double payments, is going to be mainly interest. So you're not going to get much. But if you do own the thing for 20 years or whatever, or 15 years, you are going to get a pretty good chunk of change back at the end, assuming you sell it for what you paid for it. You'll get a lot. You'll get a pretty good chunk of change back, which maybe you could use on a down payment on the new house or something like that, or the next condo. So, they are definitely better than a rent. But I wouldn't get one for short term use, because you're actually buying the thing. Once you buy it, you have to then turn around and sell it. And if the economy tanks or the housing market tanks, you may not be able to sell it for what you paid for it. So you might need to stay there a while. So if you don't want to stay there for any length of time, let's say you only need a place to live for 2 years, I wouldn't buy one, because I think it's kind of like putting money that you're going to need in 2 years into the stock market. It's not a wise idea. It's possible you'll make a killing, but the risk is just too great that the stock market will drop in value. And if it does, you're not going to be in the market long enough for it to come back up again. So you'll just lose your money. And that could happen with a condo or anything like that. So, unless you're going to be in the thing for 5 or 10 years, I wouldn't buy anything. I would just rent. And remember that when you own a condo, you have to pay taxes on it. You're going to get a property tax bill from the town. It probably won't be very much, because, again, you're just paying on the value of the condo, basically what's inside the walls, but you certainly will have a bill. So that's something else to add to your payments that you're gonna have to pay. So with that, I hope you got something out of this show. If you're thinking about getting into a condo, just again, make sure you understand what you're getting into before you do so. And please, if you enjoy the show and feel that it's worth it to you, please consider joining the Foundation Club somehow, either by helping with the show, being on the show, or giving a fiscal donation to the cause. Again, $39 till the end of the end of this week, Sunday, or $49 a year thereafter to be an official member of the club. So with that, I want to thank you for listening to the Homeowner's Friend Podcast, the podcast that will help you achieve the American dream and live the best life you can, even on a rice and beans budget. And we're going out today with a slightly different song, just for something different. It's A Cabin in the Woods by Stephen Kellogg. That's Stephen with a PH, and his last name's got two L's and two G's, Stephen Kellogg. And it's from his album, Glass Jaw Boxer. Take care, folks. Thanks a lot.
I live up here in this cabin in the woods, up where nobody visits and probably nobody should. There's a lot to consider once you get inside the door. I got a box full of secrets buried under the floorboards. Where is all my family? Why did no one stay with me? Wailing walls, how could you give up on me? but I don't hear a word. Then this angel of mercy comes in like a vision. It's a great bird of prey weighing all my decisions. Yeah, the vulture swoops down with a match and some gas. Say burn the whole place and the pain will pass. Where's the bluebird of my youth? In the absence of the truth, of the truth. Wailing walls, how could you give up on me? Wailing walls, blacker than you've ever seen. And out of a dream, a voice in my head. Mercy it left, forgiveness is dead. The guns have grown cold, the soldiers have bled. And I won't live. Wailing walls, how could you give up on me? Wailing walls, blacker than you've ever seen. How could you give up on wailing walls? How could you give up on me? How could you give up on me? Could you give up on me? It's blacker than you've ever seen. It's out of a dream, it's out of a dream, it's out of a dream.